Good morning. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, February 10th, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later, Christina Thomas will join me to help us ring in the Year of the Snake with a field trip to the Reptile Museum. And she takes us into the kitchen at Ella's to find out how a new quiche cup there was inspired by our program. First, a busy week at the state legislature the past 5 or 6 days. Abortion, capital punishment, and guns all had the attention of lawmakers. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis has this week in review at the Capitol.
The Arkansas House this week approved legislation that would allow churches to decide whether to allow concealed weapons in their houses of worship. Some have raised concerns that allowing weapons could lead to insurance companies raising rates for churches that allow weapons, but the bill's sponsor, Republican Nate Bell of MENA, told his colleagues that hasn't happened elsewhere.
There's simply no logical reason to believe that insurance companies would single out Arkansas churches for such draconian policy changes when they have not done so in other states. Opponents of this bill have also argued that Senate Bill 71 would lead to visible handguns in places of worship and that this would be disruptive to worship. Our concealed carry law requires that the licensee keep his or her handgun entirely concealed and provides for revocation of their license if a firearm is carried visibly.
The bill, which earlier passed in the Senate, was approved by the House this week by a vote of 85-8. Governor Mike Beebe has said he will sign it, but wants to work with lawmakers on the wording of the bill to address concerns about liability. And there has been a lot of talk about guns in the state legislature lately, but a Senate bill that went to the House Education Committee this past week would make sure that schools know what to do in the event of an act of violence. District 30 Senator Linda Chesterfield of Little Rock introduced Senate Bill 93, and she says that it would mandate the Senate or House Education Committee conduct a study. That study would assess schools' readiness to respond to acts of violence on their campuses.
What it would do is it would require or ask that each school district in the state create a readiness program in cases of, God forbid, school violence. It's a simple deal. It does what it says it's going to do. We need to know how many school districts are ready. Fort Smith is going through it right now. And other school districts, I hope, will be going through the same thing.
The reason that Chesterfield proposed this study is that she is not in favor of a one-size-fits-all solution to address the problem of acts of violence at schools.
Each school will do it differently. Some will have in place guards at their school. Some will have in place metal detectors at their school. Some will have in place a signal that will say lock down all of the rooms. It could be a number of things, but it would determine whether or not they're indeed looking at it, because I'm thinking that some school districts have not considered it. I would hope that it would be similar to what we would do in case of a tornado warning and make it become a part of the system's thought.
But Senator Chesterfield's bill is one of a handful of active bills dealing with school violence or gun control. Two bills also under consideration deal with allowing licensed and trained faculty and staff of state universities to carry concealed weapons on public college campuses. But the state legislature took on other issues besides guns this past week. Members of the Arkansas House of Representatives say a convicted rapist shouldn't have parental rights should the rape victim become pregnant and decide to keep the baby. Representative John Edwards of Little Rock, a Democrat, sponsored the bill. He says it's an unlikely scenario, but should be law.
Think about this. A woman's been raped. She finds out that she's pregnant. She decides to carry the child. During the trial of her rapist, she is served with custody papers.
That's the situation Edwards wants to prevent. He says that's what happened to a Missouri woman before a judge intervened on her behalf. The bill does not remove child support responsibilities. No one spoke against the bill, and there were no votes against it. It now goes to the Senate Judiciary Committee. And Arkansas is on the way to having a new execution law. The Senate Judiciary Committee on Wednesday approved a bill that says how executions in the state must be carried out. The previous law was struck down by the state Supreme Court, which said it gave too much authority to the Department of Correction. Attorney General Dustin McDaniel says the new bill is the state's best shot at fixing the legislation, but he expects further legal battles no matter what is passed. If this law passes, he says 8 death row inmates will be up for execution.
We have 8 inmates on death row currently whose appeals are exhausted, whose remedies are exhausted. And if we have a constitutionally sound method of execution that the courts won't stop, then yes, I will send a letter to the governor asking that he sign death warrants.
The bill passed unanimously. No one spoke against it, and it was passed on to the House Judiciary Committee, though the bill has not been placed on the committee's agenda. Governor Mike Beebe said Thursday that he will sign it if the bill makes it through the House.
Yeah, it's a law. I mean, what they're doing is they're responding in a way to the Supreme Court decision that makes it legal. It doesn't change my own personal angst about ever having to sign those things, which I still possess, but it is the law.
Governor Beebe has said recently he would sign a bill abolishing the death penalty if it reached his desk, though no such bill has been proposed. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
A new exhibit at Crystal Ridges Museum of American Art has highlights from a half dozen other museums in our region. Materials included in the new exhibit are on loan from museums in Tahlequah, Eureka Springs, Fayetteville, and elsewhere. The new exhibit replaces a similar one that included items from other museums, like the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale and from the University of Arkansas Museum Collection. And speaking of Shiloh Museum and the U of A Collection, the former has a new exhibit featuring pieces from the latter. Ozarks at Large's John Schlois has this report.
It's not often that one local museum showcases the collection of another museum, but that's happening this week as the Fayetteville meteorite, a black bear, and glowing minerals go on display at the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History in Springdale. The items come from the University of Arkansas Museum Collections, which had an exhibit hall in the Fieldhouse on Garland Avenue until 2003. Curator of Collections Mary Suter says the museum's exhibit hall, administrative offices, and education department were all closed down for budgetary reasons. Suter now manages a vast collection of artifacts covering several studies.
Obviously, we have a very large archaeological collection. We have the largest collection of artifacts collected from Arkansas. We have a costume collection. Like, we have lots of UA band jackets through time. We have an ethnographic collection that centers on Africa and Mexican masks and a lot of historic Native American pieces. We have a geology collection that includes rocks, minerals. We have a history collection that has a very large pressed glass component. And then, of course, we have the zoology collection, which is skins, skulls, and some hole mounts, and then fluid specimens.
Suter says that the collection has 7.5 million artifacts in all. She says, however, that a lot of those artifacts are very small, like projectile points or bunches of small fish and bluff shelter seeds. Suter says the University Museum started in the geology department in the late 1800s as a sort of way to collect different minerals to show students. At the time, there was a growing search for the mineral wealth of Arkansas. That collection then morphed into a cabinet of curiosities, accepting other artifacts, like Native American pottery and cultural relics. Suter says the museum's first director, Sam Dillinger, felt that artifacts found in Arkansas should remain in Arkansas, so he organized the formal museum and began building up other segments, like zoology and history. This year is the 140th anniversary of that original geology collection, according to records, and today the collection remains intact and continues to grow, even though much of it rarely gets out in front of the public. Besides a small exhibit space on the fifth floor of Old Main, some objects go out on loan to other museums. Suter says it's nice to have a variety of the different types of objects in the collection on display locally at the Chalet Museum. The director of the Chalet Museum, Alan Lord, says she has two main goals for this exhibit, which opens this week.
The exhibit is really about two things. One is a little bit about the history of the museum, which started more or less in 1873, and therefore was marking the 140th year this year. And it will talk a little bit about how it went from different professors collecting things to use in their classes to becoming more of both a research collection and a show exhibit collection. So we'll talk about that history. Mm-hmm. But the other thing that I really want to emphasize is since the museum as a public space closed in 2003, the collections that are now 140 years old or less are still around. They still exist, and they're still used both for research within the university and outside the university, and by museums like myself and others that borrow things for exhibit and other purposes.
Lord worked at the University Museum as the registrar back when the exhibit space was still open, so she's familiar with a lot of the objects. She says she's trying to recreate some of the exhibits from the old museum.
Figuring out what to show was very difficult, so I hope I've given a good cross-section of that, of what's there. And I think, especially for those who remember going to the University Museum over the years, whether it was in Old Main, Hotz Hall, or in the old field house, there'll be some things that I hope they'll say, I remember that. In fact, we have three really, little collections that kind of duplicate in small sense an exhibit that was in the museum at one time.
One of those is a glass case of minerals, simple-looking rocks, some about the size of a bicycle helmet. But under a black light, the minerals begin to glow. They shine a deep purple and gold, while others shine turquoise green. The exhibit also features several study skins of different animal specimens. For Lord, one really stands out.
One of my favorite items in this whole exhibit is in the study skin section, and it was something that came in after I worked there, so I'd never seen it. And it's called a green spider monkey. It's relatively small, and it's laid out in what we've called the speed racer position, with arms fully out in front and legs fully out, so it's somewhat flat, of course. There's no skeleton in it, but it's slightly green. It has a little widow's peak like Eddie Munster, and it's just an amazing, amazing specimen. It's one of my favorites.
Some of the other animals on display are suspended in alcohol in large glass jars. There's a large frog, snakes, and minnows, of which he's actually taking guesses on the total, kind of like jelly beans in a jar. Lord says some visitors may not be particularly fond of the suspended animals, but there are several other objects of curiosity. A large organ-like piece sits in a corner. Lord says this piece will be popular for anyone with a connection to the University of Arkansas.
We actually have the early furniture piece, which is a keyboard and a timer that were in Old Main and was the carillon, the chiming and the music that came out of the towers of Old Main to mark the changing of classes and the hours. So this, before it became highly technical, this keyboard and its electric system and timer was what people heard coming off of Old Main. So it's a quintessential University of Arkansas piece of equipment.
There's also a section pulled from the old museum's discovery room, a room specifically designed for children to learn about science by interacting with the objects. The museum's curator of zoology, Nancy McCartney, helped organize it in the 1990s.
This was really the idea of Johnny Gentry, who was the director then, and Bob Winkleman, who was the exhibit specialist. And at that time, we were in what we call it, the old men's gym. And downstairs was this great big old room that people had used for dance classes for years and years back in the day when it was the gym. And so they decided that they would turn this into a room for kids, which is what many museums have, because it's important to get little children who have a lot of curiosity and a lot of energy interested in things. There is a magic of things. To see a real object is fascinating. You can see a picture in a book, but to see the real thing is astounding.
Alan Lord at the Shallow Museum expands on this by saying that museums provide a diverse way of learning. It's not just about sitting there and being lectured at. It's about interactivity with the objects and the people around you. She says it's also about contributing to the curation of an exhibit. She says she remains hopeful that one day the university will reopen the University Museum.
To me, it's a matter of commitment and certainly a matter of money. But I don't think the University of Arkansas has ever backed away from a challenge when it was put forward. And it certainly would be a challenge to bring something back, but the elements are there. I would love to see a university museum again. I think I was once told by someone in Florida, which has some very great museums and a great university museum, that I think the phrase he used was, every great university has a great museum. And if you think of the Harvard, of course, and Yale, and some of the better institutions, Florida being one of them, have great museums. I would say the same thing and have said about a county or a city or a state. And certainly I'd like to say that Springdale is a great city and it has a great museum. I think the same could be said of Rogers. And so I'd like that to be said about the University of Arkansas.
Well, until the university reopens the museum, you can see a selection of the objects at the Shallow Museum beginning this week. The Shallow Museum is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Admission is free. For more information about the Shallow Museum or the University of Arkansas Museum Collection, visit our website, kuaf.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm John Schlois.
I'm Brooke Gladstone, and on this week's On the Media, two stories about branding. The company that created Muzak is renouncing the term because it's got too much baggage, you think? And one man's quest to rehabilitate the word jihad. Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
On the Media, this morning at 11 on KUAF 91.3 FM. There's a new item on the brunch menu today at Ella's Restaurant in Fayetteville. It was inspired by Ozarks at Large. Christina Thomas recently went to Ella's and talked to Chef William Lyle about his latest culinary creation.
What is Ozarks at Large to us? You know, for us, it's relaxing to listen to Ozarks at Large. It's just easy news, non-biased, of course, and it's all inclusive. It seems like you guys use the whole team down there for Ozarks at Large. So as far as just relaxing, easy listening, I've started thinking about comfort food. And as far as all-inclusive, this is a brunch item that's pretty original to us. I've never seen it before, and it uses almost my entire staff. You know, it starts with my pastry chef and different aspects of the line. It'll go from the grill all the way down to saute as far as the items that we put into this cup. So I kind of thought that was representative of Ozarks at Large, as in the entire staff is involved in creating this dish.
I like it.
Cool.
Okay.
You ready to cook?
Yeah.
All right.
The all-inclusive kitchen quiche cup experience begins with Cody, Ella's pastry chef, who has prepared a quiche dough with sour cream to make the crust fluffy and crispy. Bill takes a handful of the dough and rolls it out, thin, to about the size of a salad plate, literally. He uses one to make sure the dough is just the right size. He then takes an extra large muffin tin, two of them, but the rolled out dough isn't going on the inside. Bill sprays the bottom of one tin with nonstick oil, wrapping the dough around the cup, then placing it inside the second tin. The crust for our quiche cup heads to the oven. While that bakes, Chef Bill preps the ingredients for the fill of the cups.
First things first, let's shred a potato into some cold water and let's rinse the starch off a little bit. Let it sit for 10 minutes. Okay, so I'm gonna take just a regular russet potato, gonna peel it, shred it for our hash browns, and this will be the very first level or layer in our quiche cup.
While the potatoes soak, Chef Bill preps the other ingredients.
So today we'll be
keeping at Ozarks, most of them were found regionally.
My eggs will be from Cedar Creek Farms, as well as my uncured bacon. And my mushrooms are from Sweden Creek Farms.
And our flour for the quiche dough is from War Eagle Mill.
While he's talking, he's running around the kitchen.
And we got a couple other local ingredients here. But as far as produce, there's only so much available right now. I actually bought the bacon and some of my produce here at the Wren Thicket Market, which is a nice little winter market here in Fayetteville.
Even the cheese for the dish, because of course it has to have cheese, it's brunch. Even the cheese is made locally, in Little Rock, using all Arkansas ingredients. Bill shreds this cheddar habanero. He then moves to sharpen his knife for slicing the vegetables. After sharpening his knife, he begins to slice, or julienne, the red and green bell peppers, purple onions, and shiitake mushrooms into long, thin pieces. And then he prepares a hollandaise, though it won't be needed until the product is finished. With so few ingredients, making a decent hollandaise is tricky business, at least for me. But Chef Bill is a pro. He uses both white wine vinegar and lemon juice. A lot of people use one or the other. He reduces the vinegar and melts some butter to the perfect temperature so that the sauce sets correctly. Two egg yolks, cayenne, salt, and then puts this in a double boiler. He slowly pours in sugar, whisking it together. Setting it aside for later use, but making sure it stays the right temperature as to not separate. Ella's prep kitchen is downstairs. Ingredients are carried upstairs for the final rounds of the cooking process, but not before Bill pulls the baked quiche cup from the oven.
Our final product here in the quiche cup is a perfectly round, nice cup-shaped pastry, which is perfect for, you can put anything in it. And my favorite part about it is that it's all the best parts of the quiche, minus the quiche.
He grabs the bacon, shredded potatoes, sliced veggies, hollandaise, eggs, and cheese, and heads upstairs, carefully balancing these elements on a silver tray. And he begins to cook.
All right, let's throw the bacon down on the flat top.
After removing excess water from the potatoes, he tosses them into a pan of hot bacon grease, allowing them to fry and crisp up. The sliced veggies go into an aluminum pan, along with a bit of garlic, not cooking them long so that they remain al dente.
We're actually going to start building our quiche cup now. We are going to layer in, we're going to put the potatoes in first, the very bottom, and then I like to put a little bit of cheese over those. Kind of press them in there. And we'll put the vegetable mixture on top of that. A lot of veggies. And next we'll cut our bacon in half so it'll fit in there. And then I will top that with the rest of the cheese. We've got potatoes, cheese, veggies, bacon, cheese. And we'll put that in the oven for about 5 minutes so the cheese melt.
While that's in the oven, he cooks one egg sunny side up. Bill's trick to cooking the perfect sunny side up egg is to put it in cold oil, then put it on the heat. Start on high heat, turning it to low to let it cook through without having to flip it over. We're almost finished, but not quite. The plate, of course, has to look pretty. Bill takes a square white plate and prepares to garnish. He deep fries some basil leaves. Yep, deep-fried basil leaves. He takes two cherry tomatoes, slices them on the bottom so that they stand up straight, placing another slice on the top for the basil leaf to fit right in. The plate also holds a small ceramic ramekin filled with the creamy yellow hollandaise that we made earlier. He pulls the cup from the oven.
The cup is filled all the way to the top. Let's just slide the sunny-side-up egg on top. And there we go.
Awesome.
Ozarks at Large inspired breakfast dish. And this is will actually be going on to my brunch menu here at Ella's Restaurant. It'll be on the menu every Sunday morning, and we'll probably run it for the next few months. So thank you for the inspiration.
And to eat this beautiful Ozarky quiche cup, Bill suggests slicing it right down the middle, revealing all of the tasty layers. And get a forkful of everything. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas.
And if you'd like to see Chef William Lyle creating the dish, there is a video from inside the kitchen at OzarksAtLarge.com. Wednesday, by the way, on our daily edition of the program, another concoction inspired by Ozarks at Large. Antoinette Grajeda will take us to Bentonville for an Ozarks at Large crepe. That's Wednesday on the daily edition of Ozarks at Large. The daily edition, by the way, every day at noon and 7 p.m. Sunday, February 10th, 2013. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Collins.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We have to digress before you ever hear us because we're thinking about, oh, do you want to do that? Do you want to do this? What did you hear about? Yeah.
Because there's so much to do.
Because now we're here to tell you that there's something I really want you to go do this week.
Okay, what is it?
It's a topic that I take really seriously. Mar Leverett is going to be in Fort Smith talking about the West Memphis Three.
She's covered this story from way back when.
Pretty much from the beginning.
Yes.
She said she met Damian Echols 2 weeks after his trial. She's gotten to know the other boys better. She's working with Jason Baldwin on a new book called Devil. It's not Devil's Knot. It's
no,
Not
Untied
or something. If you don't know the story, how can I tell it without telling you my opinion, which I'm not supposed to do? Three little boys were murdered in West Memphis a long time ago in 1993.
Right.
Very quickly, three teenage boys were arrested and charged with the murders. They were boys in black.
They were convicted.
And they were convicted.
Remain convicted.
Yes.
They still are convicted murderers, but that
even though they were released,
yes,
right, last year?
Alford plea, which is very, very rare.
Which allowed them to be set free while and maintain their innocence while still being
considered not having
guilty.
It overturned. Yes.
As we said, Mar Leverett's written about it all along. She published The Devil's Knot, The True Story of the West Memphis Three. She's completing Justice Knot. That's the title of it.
Right.
There have been all kinds of documentaries made by HBO about it. Paradise Lost, I think they're working on number 4.
I think so.
Anyway,
there's the movie in production.
Yes, the fictionalized
right.
version. She'll speak. Mar will speak at 1:30 Wednesday in the Reynolds Room of the Smith Pendergraph Campus Center at the University of Arkansas in Fort Smith. She'll do a question and answer session and then a book signing. And if you're not familiar with this story, Google it.
No offense, but I don't know how you couldn't be. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and the fact, you know, with the Alford plea, it's so rare that you have someone go from death row to freedom when the conviction isn't overturned. I mean,
right.
it's such a rarity, such a rarity. It's such an intriguing story.
One of the questions I asked Mara was what the legacy of the case is. And she said it's only beginning to be felt, that it's being studied in law schools and criminal justice classes. It was an interesting, the first time I think that the public ever rose up and celebrities rose up and donated money.
It wasn't like Johnny Depp.
Oh, and
And Matthew McConaughey. I don't.
Henry Rollins.
Natalie Merchant from the Dixie. Or not Natalie
10,000
Merchant.
10,000 Maniacs.
No, not Natalie Merchant, but Natalie from the Dixie Chicks.
Mm-hmm. Oh. I don't know her last name.
Eddie. Who's the Pearl Jam lead singer?
Eddie Vedder.
Eddie Vedder. All of them.
So, like I said, if you're not familiar with it, people are still very polarized about it. I have
yes.
friends who,
here we are,
get up in arms about this whole thing. So, form your own opinion. If you don't know the story, Paradise Lost 3 Purgatory will be screened at 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock Tuesday in the Reynolds Room. And then on Wednesday, you can go hear Mara Leverett speak. Also this afternoon, there's a trunk show at Crystal Bridges Museum Store. It's a Keller's Candies trunk show. How can you go wrong?
What kind of candies are Keller's candies?
I don't know, but we should go find out. I know it's from 11 to 6. I'm sure they're chocolate. It's this time of year. And the show is called Love and Chocolate.
I didn't let you get there.
There's Family Sunday at Crystal Bridges from noon to 5. There's going to be music by Jeff Porter and the Claptet, Valentine making, family gallery tours. Memphis wraps up today at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville with shows at 2 and 7:30. And at 3, a little whodunit set in the 1930s, Night Must Fall at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. That ought to keep you busy for a while.
Natalie Maines. That's who's in the
picture. Natalie Maines.
Yes.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Weekend Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us is Katie Hendrickson, the host of tonight's and every Sunday night's version of Sunday Symphony. How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Very good.
Good. It's a Sunday morning.
Sunday morning, yay.
What's happening tonight on Sunday Symphony?
Tonight, we've got Sibelius and this Christian Sinding, and so we have a Norwegian and a Finnish composer. And then, you know, that's not going to fill the entire time, so I'm still looking at other things to put in there.
Finnish and Norwegian, I think, since we've been having these conversations, the first time either of those countries has been represented on Sunday Symphony.
Well, last week she had Swedish.
I did. Oh. And I've played some Sibelius before. I've never played any, like, a symphony from Sinding. This is, and you know, when you read about, you know, I don't actually know a lot about the Scandinavian tradition in classical music, but there are only a few composers, Scandinavian composers, that really got well known outside of Scandinavia, and Sibelius would be one of those. Sinding apparently had, he's not someone I know very well, but he was one of the few Norwegian composers that had much of a following outside of Scandinavia. So we're going to hear his Symphony Number 3, and it's in F major. And then from Sibelius, we're going to hear his Symphony Number 6 in D minor.
That's tonight at 7.
7 and 9.
Plus more.
Plus some more.
Surprises.
Yes, definitely.
Moving from classical music to alt country.
Completely different.
Yeah, so. I love this. I love it that my job requires me to just move to all sorts of musical genres because I like all kinds of music. So,
you sat in with the band Damn Arkansan this week.
I did. They came into the Furman Garner Performance Studio, played a really nice acoustic set, and we heard them on Ozarks at Large Friday. Well, we have one song. The song is called All Right, which will be on today, this morning. They're playing a benefit at Smoke and Barrel March 9th with a whole bunch of other local bands to upgrade the sound system at Smoke and Barrel.
And you mentioned the reason they're doing this is they really credit that venue with allowing them to become a band, to coalesce.
Yeah, they really felt like that was one of their favorite places to play and where they really felt like they became a band and got an audience. So they have a strong connection to Smoke and Barrel, and it was their idea, Damn Arkansan's idea, to come up with this benefit to upgrade the sound system.
And so the hope is with an upgraded sound system, maybe Smoke and Barrel can help more bands?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
All right, so Sibelius tonight at 7 on Sunday Symphony. Right now, Damn Arkansan.
It was really slow earlier, though. So this song is called All Right.
All right. We'll kiss like you want me to. Like you'll never leave me. Believe in what you need to. You see, just all your
The band Damn Arkansan recorded that song, All Right, inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio this week. Later this week, on our daily edition of Ozarks at Large, a folk super group of sorts will perform. Kelly Mulholland and Donna Stierna of Still on the Hill join Emily Cates and our own Mike Shirky, that's right, Mike, the host of The Pick and Post Saturday nights on KUAF, for some songs inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio in advance of a big show featuring all of them that's coming up at the Fayetteville Underground. That'll be on the daily edition of Ozarks at Large later this week.
It's the anthem of movie land.
Oh, you want me to sing it? Hooray for Hollywood.
The president of the Hollywood Chamber of Commerce is no Beyonce, but you can probably sing it too. Such a perky, peppy number. But is it really a salute? I'm Susan Stamberg, the history of Hooray for Hollywood, on the next Morning Edition from NPR News.
Morning Edition, tomorrow morning from 5 until 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Theater Squared's Season 7 continues with Sons of the Prophet, with performances running February 14th through March 3rd at Walton Art Center's Nadine Baum Studios. This comic play, a finalist for the 2012 Pulitzer Prize, follows a young man coping with a family crisis, frustrating job, and medically mysterious pain. Tickets and information at theater2.org or 443-5600.
Today, many Chinese are celebrating the Lunar New Year, saying goodbye to the Year of the Dragon and hello to the Year of the Snake. So I decided to take a trip to the Ozarks Reptile Museum, which has had many homes over the years. When it opened in the mid-90s, it was located on the Fayetteville Square. The small museum is now housed in a small strip on Township, just off the street. The large windows provide some sun for Hercules, the red slider turtle, Norberta, a fast lizard from Australia, Jaws, the alligator snapping turtle, and Manny, the African monitor. Though owner Jonathan Lusk is scared of snakes in the wild, he daily hangs out with upwards of 25 snakes. All of his are non-venomous and born in captivity, so they're used to being handled. His interest in reptiles was aroused as a young boy growing up in Chicago, where there wasn't a lot of wildlife. He decided to show off his pets in 1996, after a string of bad luck.
Most landlords don't want reptiles on their property. In this town, you can barely keep dogs and cats, you know, or children practically around the university. But after I got my first boa constrictor when I was 18, senior in Fayetteville High School, I started getting more. And then when I got apartments, apartment owners, when they found out about it, they would usually say they had to leave, get rid of the snakes or the turtles or lizards, you're gonna have to leave. In a period of 13 years, I was evicted over 60 times.
So Lusk decided to get a commercial building, abide by city ordinances, and keep them on public display. He says his collection is about as large as it has ever been. A lot of them come from people who can no longer keep them. Either they've become too much for them to handle, they have kids, or, like Lusk, have issues with their landlords. He says that just like some species of dogs that people are often threatened by, snakes and other reptiles are just misunderstood. And while they aren't cuddly like a dog or cat,
they do know who their owners are, you know, they can tell by the smell and the way you handle them and all. Turtles, of course. I think lizards can hear. Of course, snakes can't even hear, so there's no sense talking to them or anything. They pick up vibrations out of the air and off the ground from their bodies, but the turtles can actually hear people talking just like a dog or a cat. You know, they hear when you got the food coming, they can hear your feet shuffling in the food. And the lizards, too, they're pretty sort of affectionate in a way. They know who you are. They just don't have fur.
This is the only place to see such animals in the area. The museum is open most days, and Lusk is eager to show you around. There are various aquariums, glassed-in boxes, and large silver tubs laid out around the room. And in one...
But this is the alligator snapping turtle, called the monster turtle. It's endangered in this part of the state of Arkansas, although there are a few in Beaver Lake and the White River. But the one here is 12 years old now. When I got it, it's about the size of a silver dollar. Now it weighs about 25 pounds. Anyway, this turtle could get up to 500-600 pounds. It's the largest freshwater turtle in the world.
They'll eat anything. Veggies, mammals, fish. His name is Jaws, and his prehistoric-looking jaws eat 50 to 100 minnows each week, and sometimes steak. Next to him is Norberta, the lizard. Then a trough with six or so box turtles, the kind we'll soon see in our yards and watch out for on our roads.
In the jungle terrarium, we have what I call the Corvette of snakes, the green tree pythons. They come from Australia, New Guinea, Indonesia, and they're very beautiful, from lime green. Some of them are blue, some of them have white dots on over them, yellow. Some of them are, they're all pretty expensive. They cost anywhere from $300 or $400 in their babies. Some of them are $10,000 or $15,000 a piece because of their rarity. And the prettier they are, the more they cost.
And that's why they're the Corvette snake. He says they're also difficult to take care of. These two are a vibrant lime green color and are sleeping the day I visit, though I don't know how. Somehow, they're coiled around themselves and draped over a branch. Lusk says they look like a pastry, a jelly Danish or a cinnamon roll, perhaps. Though they spend the day sleeping in trees, they come down to the ground at night to hunt. Fun fact, pretty much all male snakes are smaller than the female, who is usually twice as long and three or four times thicker to hold the eggs. Below them are the Kenyan sand boas, small snakes that literally live 6 or so inches below the sand, sticking their heads up to grab mice, which they only need to eat like 3 or 4 a month to survive. These two have made babies. Born in October, the babies are still just 6 or so inches long. He also has an albino boa constrictor. Albinos don't survive long in the wild. Due to their contrasting color, they're easily spotted out by predators. Lusk picks this one up out of its cage to show me. It curls around his arm and hand, occasionally reaching its head towards my microphone and me. They sense heat and vibrations. I must say I was rather jumpy inside the museum.
And people get scared when they're in there and they hear a little noise like that. It might be the air freshener machine just spraying every 15 minutes or one of the animals, and they get all scared and want to run out of the place. Most people are afraid of animals. They come in there and they all have a little snake out about 2 feet long, a miniature boa constrictor, and they just stand by the door and they go, no, I can't, you know, like they want to escape real fast. And 30 minutes later, they'll be holding a 6-8 foot boa constrictor around their neck, getting a picture taken by their spouse or one of their children, because once they realize they're not that dangerous.
He says that once people realize they won't get hurt, they get excited to hold the animals. He would never do anything to hurt someone, his kind eyes confirm. He has a couple of albino snakes. One is the albino California king snake. Typically, they're black with white rings. This one is a light lavender with yellowish rings. King snakes are our friends, eating mice and birds and venomous snakes like copperheads.
Red touches black, is a friend of Jack. Red touches yellow, will kill a fellow. Yeah. And there's all different variations of that, but little children seem to remember it. But as you grow older, you just sort of forget it. But it's best just to stay away from snakes unless you know exactly what they are, because they could be venomous.
Again, all of Lusk's snakes are non-venomous. And he'll help visitors by saying which snakes are and aren't poisonous in our area. The albino snakes live in aquariums on top of one large wooden box. This box has latches and a glass window, large, in front.
And over here in this giant cage, we have the boa constrictors, red-tailed boa constrictor from Colombia, and a pair of yellow anacondas. They're not actually yellow. They're more of a orangish, greenish yellow. With the yellow, they don't get as big. The green anaconda gets up to 30 feet long, 500 pounds. And the yellow anaconda only get up to 10 feet long. They're from Argentina. As you can see, the male's in the water. He's skinny, only 6 feet long or so, and the female's about 10 feet long.
Only, he says. These snakes totally freaked me out. I wasn't that scared when I first arrived. I even thought I might hold a snake. I stood there chatting with Lusk for about 10 minutes. Then I looked over to my left and noticed these snakes. The boa constrictor is about as big around as my head, or bigger. But don't worry, they're not native here. Their homes begin in Mexico and move down throughout South America. Next door is the largest silver trough in the building, housing Captain Hook II, a 5-year-old, 4-foot-long American alligator.
Captain Hook I is down at the alligator farm in Hot Springs. They have over 200 down there. When he was 6 feet long, weighed about 60 pounds, I donated him to the Arkansas alligator farm. The owner's daughter was going to the university then.
Captain Hook moved toward me abruptly.
Oh,
sorry.
That's okay. You want to see him in action? I trout fish and I save the trout heads with him. It's okay. You can come up a little bit closer if you want to take a picture.
And he can't get out of there?
No, not now. Maybe in a year or two he could.
Okay.
He's actually about 40 inches long, but I'm going to put a little chunk of food in here for him.
Okay.
Just let you see how fast he moves.
Yep, Captain Hook the Second sure can move fast.
Now he is staring at me.
Ooh. And on Saturdays.
Ah. Whew. Well, maybe next time I'll muster up the courage to hold a boa constrictor. Until then, if you'd like to see pictures from my visit, go to our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com. And for more information about the Reptile Museum, visit nwareptilemuseum.com. And happy Lunar New Year. Here's to the Year of the Snake. This is Weekend Ozarks at Large.
And to celebrate the Year of the Snake, we've put together a montage of snakes in popular culture. See how many of these movies, TV shows, and songs you can identify as they slither into your radio.
Trust in me, just in me. Shut your eyes and trust in me. Hold still, please. You can sleep safe and sound.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
She said, I don't like spiders and snakes, and that ain't what it takes to love me.
Stop! That's my car! That smells like regular. She needs premium, dude. Premium! Dude!
Pass steps away from the rush. He's got a run up to left side. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown, Austin Raiders!
Lipera Ivanaska.
You're looking good just like a snake in the grass. One of these days you're gonna break your glass.
Morning.
Morning.
What you got then?
Well, there's egg and bacon, egg, sausage and bacon, egg and spam, egg, bacon and spam, egg, bacon, sausage and spam. Spam, bacon, sausage and spam. Spam, egg, spam, spam, bacon and spam. Spam, 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 egg and spam. Spam, 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 spam. Baked beans, spam, spam, spam and spam.
Enough is enough!
The union of the snake is on the climb. Moving on, it's gonna race, it's gonna race.
A cold-blooded montage for this edition of Weekend Ozarks at Large. To see a list of the 10 movies, songs, and shows, you can go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
Coming up in the week ahead, as the sequester looms, former Pentagon official Michel Flournoy joins us to break down the defense budget. And Wednesday, our favorite presidential speechwriters Paul Glastras and Peter Robinson join political junkie Ken Rudin to review the State of the Union address. I'm Neil Conan. All that and more in the week ahead on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation, every weekday from 1 until 3 on KUAF 91.3 FM. And you can hear a daily edition of Ozarks at Large every weekday at noon and then repeat it again at 7 o'clock on KUAF. Tomorrow on the daily edition of Ozarks at Large, a report about legislation that would allow faculty and staff to have guns on college campuses in the state of Arkansas. That's on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large. Plus, nanotechnology explained, or at least beginning to be explained. We'll have a preview of the latest Science Cafe sponsored by the University of Arkansas. And then later in the week on Daily Ozarks at Large for Fat Tuesday, Christina Thomas goes into the kitchen at Café Rue Orleans to find out how beignets are made with Marty Schmidt. And later in the week, Grace Kelly is coming to Walton Arts Center for two shows next weekend. Robert Ginsburg of Shades of Jazz on KUAF talks to her about her amazing career she's already had by the age of 21. We'll learn more about the Ozark chinkapin, a disappearing tree in our region, plus the latest from the state capitol and the Arkansas legislature, and much more. That's all ahead on the daily edition of our program, noon and 7, this coming week. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Siloam Springs. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. For Christina Thomas, I'm Kyle Kellums. Antoinette Grajeda will be your host tomorrow at noon for a brand new edition of Daily Ozarks at Large. Ira Glass and This American Life coming up next on KUAF. Have a safe and peaceful rest of your Sunday. Thanks for listening.